His human form returned to normal, although his suit is ruined. He shakes his head, his smile like a disappointed teacher.
"Come now, Ella," he says. "We must put this episode behind us."
I hold up my blood-covered hand for him to see. "Why? Why did you do this to me?"
"It was the only way for you to learn that Mogadorian progress is more important than even your own life,"
he replies. Cedricus Ra gathers me up in his arms. As I start to lose consciousness, he whispers gently,
"You won't disobey beloved leader again, will you?"
Chapter 23. Adam's flight plan is to take us down the Atlantic coast until we hit Florida, then dip back west over the Gulf, and finally arrive at the southeastern tip of Mexico. With the skimmer flying at maximum speed and staying low enough to avoid any other aircraft, the trip should take about 4 hours. It's a quiet ride. I lean back in my seat and watch the coast ebb and flow beneath us. Adam doesn't say much of anything. He keeps his eyes straight ahead, occasionally adjusting our course when his systems pick up another aircraft. Dust naps on the floor at his feet. As for Marina, she remains typically rigid, her whole fear of flying thing not getting any better with a Mogadorian at the controls. "You know, you can rest for a few hours," Adam suggests eventually, his tone cautious. I'd already been close to dozing off, so he must be talking to Marina. She's sitting straight-backed, a slight chill coming off her. She must be looming right in the corner of Adam's eye. Marina seems to consider this for a moment, then leans forward so that her head is nearly on Adam's shoulder. He raises an eyebrow, but otherwise keeps his hands on the controls. "The last trip Six and I made south was less than a week ago," Marina says, her voice measured. "We found out too late that we had a traitor traveling with us. I ended up stabbing him in the eye. That was me being merciful." "I know what happened in Florida," Adam says. "Why are you telling me this?"
"Because I want you to know what will happen if you betray us," Marina replies, leaning back. "And don't tell me to rest."
Adam looks over at me for help, but I shrug my shoulders and turn away. Marina's still figuring out just how angry she wants to be, and I'm not going to get in her way. Besides, I don't think putting a little fear in our Mogadorian companion is such a bad thing. I assume he's just going to let the conversation die. But after a few minutes, Adam speaks up. "Yesterday, for the first time, I picked up a sword that's been in my family for generations. I'd never been allowed to touch it before, only admire it from afar. It belonged to my father, General Andrakus Sutek. He was fighting number 4, John. I drove that sword through my father's back and killed him." Adam delivers this speech matter-of-factly, like he's reading the news. I blink at him, then glance over my shoulder at Marina. She's looking down at the floor, deep in thought. As the chill rising off her begins to die down, Dust picks himself up and goes over to her. The wolf rests his head in Marina's lap. "Cool story," I say to Adam when it becomes painfully clear that someone needs to break the silence. "I've never known anyone who carried around a sword before." "Cool," Adam repeats, frowning. "My point is, you don't need to doubt my loyalty."
"I'm sorry you had to do that to your father," Marina says after a moment. "I didn't know."
"I'm not," Adam replies brusquely. "But thanks for the sympathy." To break the tension, I start messing with some of the dials on the skimmer's console. "Does this thing have a freaking radio or what? Are we just going to tell death stories the whole way?" Adam is quick to readjust the dials right after me. I think I catch him smiling a little, probably relieved that the death threat portion of the trip is over. "There's no radio," he says. I can hum some Mogadorian standards if you'd like.
Oh, barf, I reply, and Marina snickers in the back seat. I realize Adam is giving me a funny look, his angular face more open than I've seen, that defensive stoicism he wears stripped away. For a moment, he almost looks comfortable being up here with two of his mortal enemies. What? I ask, and he hurriedly looks away. I realize his mind was elsewhere. Nothing, he says, almost wistful. For a second there, you just reminded me of someone I used to know. The rest of the flight is uneventful. I managed to doze off once or twice, although never for long. With dust snuggled up against her, it seems like Marina is finally able to relax. Adam refrains from humming any Mogadorian anthems. We're flying over the tropical forest of Campeche, Mexico, just another hour away from the Lorik sanctuary supposedly hidden amid the ruins of an ancient Mayan city, when a red warning light begins to flash on the skimmer's translucent windshield. I only notice it when Adam tenses up. Damn it, he says, and immediately starts flicking switches on the skimmer's control panel. What is it? Someone's locked onto us. The cameras mounted on the skimmer send images to our screen, views from the underside of the ship and behind us becoming visible. I don't see anything but cloudless blue sky and the dense canopy of the forest beneath us. Where are they coming from? Marina asks, squinting as she peers through the window. There, Adam says, jabbing his finger at the screen. On it, a Mogadorian scout ship just like ours drifts slowly towards us from below. Its roof is painted in overlapping shades of greens, camouflage to match the forest it detached from. Can we outrun it? Marina asks. I can try, Adam replies, pulling down the lever to give our skimmer some more juice. Or we can just shoot it down, I suggest. As we pick up a little speed, the blinking red light on the console multiplies into four blinking red lights. There are more of them. Two identical skimmers rise up from the jungle right in front of us, another along our side. The first still sits right on our tail. Hemmed in, Adam has no choice but to stop. The other skimmers surround us. They all have guns too, right? Marina asks. Yes, Adam replies. We're at a distinct disadvantage. Not quite, I say, and focus on the sky outside. What was cloudless a moment ago slowly begins to darken, clouds rolling in at my beckoning. Hold on, Adam warns. We don't want to give away you're all on board. You're sure they won't shoot us down? 90%, Adam says. I let go of the storm I was whipping up, allowing the clouds to drift through the sky along their natural course. A second later, a shrill beep emanates from our dashboard. They're hailing us, Adam says. They want to talk. Another plan has occurred to me, one that doesn't involve fighting a mid-air battle against bad odds. You said you're some general's kid, right? I say to Adam. So can't you, throw your weight around or something? As Adam considers this, the dashboard communicator bleats again. I should tell you, I'm not exactly well-liked among my people, he says. They might not listen to me. Yeah, well, that's a risk, I admit. Worst-case scenario, they take you prisoner, right? Adam grimaces. Yeah. So, we let them take us where we're going. Don't worry. We'll rescue you. You need to do something, Marina says, waving towards the windshield. The ship directly in front of us, getting impatient or suspicious, has brought its blaster turret around to aim at us. All right, go invisible, Adam says. I reach around my seat and grasp Marina's hand, disappearing the both of us. Sensing the situation, dust shrinks down into a tiny gray mouse and skitters under Adam's seat. Adam hits a button on the console, and a video feed crackles to life on our screen.
a nasty-looking Mogadorian scout, his empty eyes too close together, his teeth short and sharp, stares at Adam with a look of fierce annoyance. He barks something in harsh Mogadorian. Immersion protocol dictates we speak English while on Earth, you vat-born cretin, Adam replies coldly. He draws himself up in his chair, suddenly so regal that I kinda want to slap him. You are addressing Adamus Sutek, true-born son of General Andrakus Sutek. I am on urgent business from my father. Lead me to the Lorik site immediately. I have to give it to Adam. He's an excellent bullshitter. The scout's expression goes from annoyance to confusion, and finally to outright fear. Yes, sir, right away, the scout replies. And in response, Adam immediately cuts off the conversation. One by one, the skimmers break up the ring they had us trapped inside and let us get back on course. That worked, Marina says, sounding a little stunned as she lets go of my hand. For now, Adam replies, frowning uncertainly. He was low-ranking. Whoever's in command will be a different story. Can't you just tell them your dad sent you down here to check their progress? I ask. Assuming they don't know I betrayed our people and that my father essentially sentenced me to die? Yeah, that might work. You only need to distract them for a little bit, I say. Long enough for Marina and me to figure a way into the sanctuary. There it is, Marina says, watching through the windows as the skimmers begin to descend towards Kalakmul. There are a bunch of ancient little buildings below, all of them constructed from limestone that's been eroding for centuries, the jungle creeping in to reclaim them. My eyes are drawn to the huge pyramid-shaped temple that towers over them all. Built on a low hill, the temple is blocky, covered in steep and crumbling staircases that are chiseled right into the stone. I can't quite make it out from this distance, but there appears to be some kind of door at the top of the pyramid. How much you want to bet we need to climb up to that thing, I say. It's the sanctuary, Marina replies. I'm certain of it. So are my people, obviously, Adam says. The Mogadorians have cleared the jungle around the sanctuary in a perfect ring, the trees all chopped down, an entire fleet of Mogadorian scout ships parked on the naked soil. Besides the dozens of skimmers, I can make out an array of tents where the Mogs must be camping. There's also what looks to be a couple of heavy-duty missile launchers and blaster turrets, all of these weapons aimed at the temple. And yet the structure looks completely untouched. Oddly, at the base of the temple and creeping up the sides, there are still overgrown trees and vines, untended for years. It's a stark contrast to the severe neatness of the Mogadorian perimeter, where everything natural has been cleared away. It's like something kept them from getting too close, Marina says, noticing the same thing as me. Malcolm did say that only the guard could enter, I reply. Our escort of Moog ships float down to the makeshift airfield, and Adam lands a few yards away from them. The sanctuary looms in the distance. The only thing standing between us and the Lorik Temple is a strip of wide-open land and a small army of Mogadorians, many of whom have begun gathering in the airfield, all of them armed with blasters. Some welcoming committee, I say, glancing at Adam. He watches his people mass on the monitor, swallows hard, and unbuckles himself from the pilot seat. All right, I'll go first. Lead them away somehow. You guys get into the sanctuary. I don't like this, Marina says. There's a lot of them. It'll be fine, Adam says. Just get inside and do what you have to do. With that, Adam opens the cockpit and hops onto the skimmer's hull. There are about 30 Mogadorians down below, waiting on him, with more walking over from the tents. Marina and I hunker down inside the skimmer, my hand close to hers in case we need to go invisible. "Who's in charge here?" Adam yells, standing tall and rigid, again putting on his true-born airs. A tall female warrior, dressed in a sleeveless black overcoat, steps forward. She has two thick braids that start on the sides of her head and wrap around it, encircling the traditional Mogadorian tattoos on her scalp. Her hands are wrapped in dusty white bandages, like they've recently been injured or burned. "I am Firi Dunra, true-born daughter of the Honorable Magoth Dunra," the warrior shouts to Adam. Her posture is nearly as imposing and rigid as his. "Why have you come here, Sutek?" Adam hops down from our ship, tossing his head to flip his hair out of his eyes. "Orders from beloved leader himself. I am to inspect this site to prepare for his arrival." A tremor passes through the crowd when Adam mentions Cetricus Ra. Many of the Moogs exchange nervous glances. Firi Dunra, however, appears nonplussed. She strides forward, letting her blaster dangle idly next to her hip. Something tightens up in my stomach at the sight of her. The predatory way she moves, the glint in her eye like trouble could spark at any moment. She's way sharper than the other Moog warriors I've encountered. "Ah, beloved leader, of course," Firi says. She waves to the temple in the distance. "What would you like to see first, sir?" Adam takes a step towards the Moog camp and opens his mouth to speak. Smoothly, without warning, Firi lifts her blaster and cracks Adam across the mouth with the handle. As he falls to the ground, the rest of the Mogadorians level their blasters at him in unison. "How about the inside of a cell, traitor?" Firi snarls, standing over Adam, her blaster pointed at his face. Chapter 24. I extend my hand to Marina, and she grasps it immediately. Invisible, we carefully climb out of the ship, synchronizing our movements. Behind us, I hear a sudden flapping of wings. Dust takes flight in the shape of a tropical bird, his wings flecked with gray. None of the Moogs notice him soar out of the cockpit, and they don't hear Marina and me leap down to the ground. They're too distracted by the show Firi Dunra is putting on with Adam. "I know your father, Sutek," Firi is saying, projecting her voice so that the Moogs gathered in a semicircle around her and Adam can all hear. "He's a bastard, but at least he's noble. He believes in Mogadorian progress." If Adam manages a reply, I can't hear it over the murmur of agreement that comes from the other Moogs. I catch a glimpse of him through the crowd. He's crumpled at Firi's feet, scrabbling in the dirt, trying to regain his feet, but probably still seeing stars. "In fact, your father gave me this assignment," Firi continues. "I was responsible for a team that allowed a guard to escape." I catch a glimpse of him through the crowd. He's crumpled at Firi's feet, scrabbling in the dirt, trying to regain his feet, but probably still seeing stars. "In fact, your father gave me this assignment," Firi continues. "I was responsible for a team that allowed a guard to escape from the West Virginia stronghold. The punishment was either death or a journey here. Not much of a choice, really. You see, if we fail, we'll all be executed anyway. The only way to live is for us to deliver the sanctuary." At the word sanctuary, Firi makes a sarcastically dramatic gesture with her two bandaged hands that encompasses the whole of the temple. I hesitate for a moment to listen to what else she has to say. There's not a day goes by that I don't wonder if I made the wrong decision. Maybe a quick death would have been better